Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hand. Today is Wednesday, September 27th, 2017, and we're here today talking a little bit about just the Clippers, you know, still getting ready for the season to start. The Clippers' first preseason game is Sunday night this coming weekend, which is exciting, and we'll talk a little bit more about that game, probably not really until Monday afterwards, since it's a preseason game. You know, we'll preview it a little bit, but it's going to be more important to look at what we saw and actually dissect our first chance to get a look at Clipper basketball than it's going to be necessarily preview a game that ultimately is just an exhibition. But today I want to talk a little bit about a minor transaction that the Clippers made last weekend where they traded DeAndre Liggins to Atlanta. It's not a particularly important move, but there's a little, you know, I'll basically explain it because I know I've got some questions about that. And then we will continue the player preview series and just go over a little bit of news and reports out of Media Day and training camp. So first, the DeAndre Liggins trade. I don't think we ever actually saw reported exactly what all of the details of the trade were, but essentially the Clippers sent DeAndre Liggins to the Atlanta Hawks, and then the Atlanta Hawks waived him. And there's some combination of cash and draft assets going one way or the other. I have a hard time imagining that the Clippers got anything worthwhile from Atlanta in return in this trade, because Atlanta made the decision to waive DeAndre Liggins immediately. So they, like, for example, maybe if Atlanta thought DeAndre Liggins was going to make their team, they may have given the Clippers a future second round pick for him. But because Atlanta cut him immediately, they obviously didn't value him enough to give something worthwhile up. So if the Clippers did get something, it was probably like the draft rights to some player that Atlanta drafted in 2007 who never came over from Europe and is no longer considered an NBA prospect. So it's like basically nothing, as close as you can get to trading nothing. The reason the Clippers did this trade is because DeAndre Liggins had like $27,000 guaranteed on his contract. And as we've talked about in recent shows, the Clippers are really towing that line of the luxury tax, the less than $100,000 underneath it. Now, you know, so not including Liggins' full contract, they were, I believe, about $90,000 underneath the luxury tax line. That $90,000 number was factoring in the fact that even if they cut Liggins, they had to pay him $27,000. Now that they traded Liggins and Atlanta cut him, Atlanta has to pay him that $27,000, and the Clippers can take that $27,000 off of their cap sheet. That gives them just a little more flexibility for any potential 10-day contracts or rest of season contracts, or if they add a little bit of salary in a trade. It just gives them a little more wiggle room going into the season. So it's a minor move. It's incredibly likely that it will not end up factoring into the Clippers' decision making at all, and that $20,000 won't help them during the season. But there's a chance that it will. So it makes, you know, it makes sense that they made the move. They weren't going to be able to keep Liggins anyway, because that would have put them into luxury tax territory. So ultimately, it's a smart financial move, even though it's not overly influential. I expect that in addition to Liggins, the Clippers also probably sent some cash to Atlanta. They probably sent, you know, $27,000 to cover the $27,000 that DeAndre Liggins was owed, or maybe a little more than that to incentivize Atlanta to do the trade. So if the Clippers sent $78,000, then Atlanta got, you know, they paid DeAndre Liggins and then they got to pocket the rest. And Atlanta is not in a tricky situation with the luxury tax, so having that little bit of money on their cap sheet doesn't really matter much for them. As far as Media Day goes, which was earlier this week, there wasn't, you know, I feel like Media Day is really overhyped. I'm not a huge Media Day guy. I don't think you necessarily find out a lot of new information at Media Day. I mean, there's some worthwhile stuff for sure, but I feel like fans who have just gone through the drought expect there to be like huge, shocking Media Day revelations. They want me to do like a 2-hour podcast and write 10 articles about like all this brand new stuff. It's like, no, this is just basically the team making official everything that we've learned and heard about for the last 3 months. So there's not a lot of new stuff going on. It's just kind of like a season preview in a sense. But so there is a little bit worth talking about. I think, you know, Danilo Gallinari said that the Clippers expect to have the number one front court in the NBA, which I think is cool. I mean, they're definitely up there when you consider that Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan are who they are, and then the Clippers went out and added Danilo Gallinari, who's an elite scorer. There are some other really good front courts in the NBA as well, obviously, but I think that this front court is certainly in the conversation, and it's nice to see them have that confidence and hopefully realize that they're going to be very dependent on their front court, because I think that this team's back court, while it has an interesting collection of guards that I like, overall is not going to be especially strong, especially stacked up against, you know, playoff caliber backcourts in the Western Conference. I also saw a picture where they had all four of those guards, Beverly, Rivers, Teodosic, and Lou Williams, posing together for a photo. And I really think that that sort of, I mean, it's silly to read into a picture too much, but I think it sort of embodied the spirit that it's going to be like an ensemble cast between those four guys dealing with the guard rotation this year. And so I'm looking forward to seeing all of this play out. I just think that maybe fans hyped it up a little too much. Like, they expected to get something out of Media Day that they didn't get. Or, like, I saw a lot of people upset that the Clippers didn't stream video of the Media Day press conferences, but it's not like they were going to be especially riveting press conferences. So I just don't feel like we necessarily missed much. But I think it just shows how antsy fans are, how ready they are for the season to actually begin. And so, you know, when the season gets going, that hopefully we can channel that energy into stuff that actually matters, because I don't think Media Day is overly important. I hope people don't get upset over, you know, the rotation in a preseason game or something like that. But then once we start getting into the season, hopefully we can carry through that passion that we've built up over the summer. The other thing of note from Media Day is that Danilo Gallinari and Blake Griffin are both totally healthy, which is something that, you know, if you were paying attention, you sort of knew, but there were enough whispers that it's nice to just have it fully out there. And then today, on Wednesday, following the Clippers' first practice in Hawaii, Doc Rivers confirmed that Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari, as well as everyone else on the roster, participated in everything that the team did. So they didn't do full 5-on-5 live game stuff. They did a lot of walkthrough stuff and drills and that sort of thing in their first practice. But everyone who was there participated in everything, which is as much as you can possibly hope for. If you want to see the Clippers in action as their season begins next week, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy, with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. SeatGeek helps you get the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites, compare prices, and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LONBA today. That's promo code LONBA for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, in the back half of this episode, I want to get through some more player previews as we've continued this series on ClipsNation.com. We're about halfway through the team now, so there's a lot more to come later this week and into next week, especially as we get into the more important players and the starters and all of that. But so I'm going to talk about three guys today. I'm going to talk about Bryce Johnson, Willie Reed, and Lou Williams. And so a lot of this may be stuff that you guys have heard already, because like I said, as we come into the season, we're sort of rehashing stuff that we talked about in the summer. But, you know, I just want to give a little bit of a preview of what we expect from these guys and what their role should be with the team and how the team probably views them long term. So I'll start with Bryce Johnson. I think Bryce Johnson is – I'm low on Bryce. I'm not as low on Bryce as maybe some people, but I'm definitely not high on him. And I see people that are high on Bryce that think he's ready to step into a rotation role, and I just don't see it. There is some skill there. He's not a bad basketball player. But I just don't think that – I think his combination of how weak he is, which really hurts him defensively and rebounding at the NBA level, and I think that when you combine it with his lack of motor, just makes it really, really hard for him to be a rotational NBA player. I mean, we saw it in the summer league where he'd have stretches where he was great, then he's just lazy and lackadaisical, and that's the type of thing where you can say, well, it's just the summer league. He was clearly too good to be there. You put him in an NBA camp, you put him in an NBA game, playing with all of these really talented players where he's going to need to push himself, and he'll step up. But the truth is, at any, you know, at by all accounts, at every level so far, Bryce has always been a low motor guy. He's just been good enough to get away with it. And so can he learn that motor to really step up in the NBA? Because he's going to have to be a hustle athleticism guy, because he's never going to have the strength, and the skills are positive, but they're not good enough to make him on his own. So he's going to need to be a hustle athleticism guy. He's going to need to use those long arms. He's going to need to use that jumping ability, and he's going to need to like wake up. It's like he's always playing half asleep or something. Like he needs to drink a Red Bull or I don't know. But I just don't see it with him, especially with all of the options that the Clippers have at the power forward position, where, you know, obviously Montrezl Harrell is a guy who you would consider to be ahead of him, and Montrez is kind of blocked from playing minutes at center because of Willie Reed, who we'll talk about in a second. So Montrez seems to be the backup, and Bryce seems to be the third string. But even if the Clippers have some, you know, some injury issues or whatever, and they need more help at power forward, Danilo Gallinari is a very, very effective power forward and can easily slide over from the small forward position. Sam Decker, who's the Clippers' backup small forward, played a ton of power forward in Houston last season. He almost exclusively played power forward in their small ball system. And then even Wesley Johnson, who I think figures to be way out of the rotation, and a guy like Jameel Wilson, who's on a two-day contract, I'm just not sure that Bryce has really shown himself to be, you know, if you needed someone to step into those minutes right now, 12 backup power forward minutes, I know a lot of people would want Bryce to play because we know that Wesley Johnson is bad and Bryce is like an unknown quantity, but I really think that Wesley's probably more dependable at this point. I'm not saying that I wouldn't give Bryce a chance, but I'm not super optimistic that, let's say Montrez got hurt and we knew for the first 20 games of the season someone else was going to need to play 12 minutes at backup power forward. First of all, you would obviously play Gallinari and Decker there, but if you were to extend that to another player in your 10-man rotation, I would give Bryce a chance, but I would have my money on Wesley probably being more effective. And I don't think that says very good things about Bryce Johnson. Remember, this is a guy who, it's easy to give him a break because last season he got hurt before the season even began, and he missed so much of training camp and so much of the season, and that's really tough as a rookie. And so even when he did come back from that back injury, he was way out of it. He was way behind the curve. So it's easy to give him a break on that. But I do think that we have to remember that before he got hurt, it was rumored that Diamond Stone had like passed him on the totem pole. It's not a good sign when a team's second round pick overtakes their first round pick in training camp of their rookie season. And then we saw Diamond Stone obviously didn't prove himself that much because the Clippers, you know, dumped his salary in a trade and or they used his salary as filler in the trade to get Danilo Gallinari, and he was never really able to earn much of an opportunity with the Clippers either. So it's not like the Clippers thought really highly of Diamond Stone, and even if they liked Diamond more than Bryce, they still could have liked Bryce because they clearly didn't like Diamond that much. So I'm not super optimistic on Bryce. I'm actually really curious to see what the Clippers do with his team option, because first-round picks have 2 years guaranteed plus two team options. The thing is, you don't get to pick up the team option right before the offseason, like with a normal contract. with a rookie contract, you pick up the team option before the season begins. So the Clippers are going to have to decide very soon if they want to pick up Bryce Johnson's option or not. I expect that they will, because it's so cheap and you haven't really gotten a chance to see him yet. So I expect that they'll pick up the option, but I think it'll be a little more interesting next year if he doesn't have a great year this season. If they, going into year three, he still hasn't done much, do they pick up the option for year four? And it wouldn't shock me to see next season, a year from now, us talking about that the Clippers should probably not pick up that fourth-year option on Bryce Johnson. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully he has a good year, but I'm low right now. I'm skeptical. Next, Willie Reed. Willie Reed, I think, is one reason to be skeptical about Bryce Johnson, just because Montrezl Harrell proved himself as not a great player, but a capable NBA rotation player in Houston last season. And Montrezl Harrell and Bryce Johnson actually, in theory, seem like a good fit to play next to each other in a front court, where Montrezl Harrell is a high-energy guy. He bounces around, but he's not super skilled, and he doesn't have long arms to block a lot of shots, whereas Bryce Johnson has those long arms to protect the rim but isn't as strong as Montrez, isn't as high-energy as Montrez, but then he can also space the floor a little bit with a jump shot. And that's one dimension, you know, just to go back to Bryce briefly, that I think he could potentially contribute, is that Montrezl Harrell and Willie Reed don't really have much of a mid-range jump shot, and Bryce is comfortable stepping out and taking those shots. But I think the fact that the Clippers were in a situation where they had Montrez and they had Bryce and they chose to take this flyer on Willie Reed shows that they don't believe in Bryce. Because Willie Reed is going to play. He's the best player of the three. As soon as they signed him, he was the best player of the three, and he put even Montrez's minutes in jeopardy. So I have a hard time seeing Bryce break in the rotation, and I think Willie Reed is a big part of that. I'm looking forward to seeing Willie Reed play this year. I hope that all of his legal troubles, which I will admit I'm not particularly well-versed in, so I don't want to get into it too much, but hopefully that is all resolved, and hopefully, you know, I don't know what exactly happened. I'm not saying that I want him to get away with it if he did something wrong just because it would benefit the Clippers, but hopefully it can reach a satisfying conclusion where we can all feel good about supporting him and he's capable to contribute to the team. I think that's, you know, the best case scenario it would be for that to happen. And in that case, I think he's like a really good DeAndre Light, sort of coming off the bench. He does a lot of the same things that DeAndre does. He was in a very, very similar role for Miami last season as like Hassan Whiteside Jr. coming off the bench, where he finishes lobs, he protects the rim, he rebounds. So I think it's going to be really useful for the Clippers, especially as a team that is going to really struggle defensively this year, to have a backup anchor. Because we haven't seen the Clippers have backup centers who defend in a similar way that DeAndre does. Cole Aldrich might actually be the closest, even though he's not a rim protector, just because he was a big body in the lane. Most Bates kind of was the same. He took charges, but again, not really in the same vein as DeAndre. And then like Spencer Hawes, a big part of Spencer Hawes' problem with the Clippers was that when he came in as backup center, he couldn't slide into their defensive system. Willie Reed is a guy who should really seamlessly slide into DeAndre's defensive role for whatever those backup minutes are on a given night, or if DeAndre's in foul trouble. And that should help bring a little more continuity and stability to a defense that is going to suffer this year because of a decline in individual perimeter defensive talent. The last player I want to talk about today is Lou Williams. This is a guy who I've talked about before, who I'm kind of low on, but kind of high on. I'm conflicted on Lou Williams. I think he is the least important of the Clippers' four guards. I think that's pretty clear cut. In the sense of the team's long-term plans, or maybe like who's most likely to be traded. I think Lou Williams is most likely to be traded of the four guards because he's a veteran, he's on the expiring contract. The Clippers got him as salary filler in the Chris Paul trade. They didn't choose to get him. Patrick Beverley was like the prize jewel of the Chris Paul trade. Austin Rivers, the Clippers signed to his current contract and have a stake in, you know, keeping him long-term because they have his bird rights and he's this good 25-year-old player. Milos Teodosic, the Clippers went to Europe and convinced him to come over and join them when he had been kind of skeptical about joining the NBA in the past, and he, you know, he had multiple offers, and the Clippers were the team he chose, and there's some sort of investment there. And it seems like Lou Williams is the one who's easiest to cut ties with. So I think at least from starting role, or like who's easiest to trade, Lou Williams is the easiest to trade. I think he comes into camp ranked fourth of the four guards. But it's going to be interesting to see as the season goes on. You know, every team struggles in certain areas. So it's going to be interesting to see when the Clippers have backcourt struggles, what is the problem with their backcourt, and is that something that's easily corrected by elevating Lou Williams' status in the team? And if it is, if the Clippers need more shot creation, and Patrick Beverley doesn't really go get his own shot very much, Austin Rivers does, but not as effectively as Lou Williams, and Teodosic is more of a creator for others, then we could see a role where Doc leans on Lou Williams more heavily, or leans on Lou Williams more heavily in bench units, but staggers the other three more in when Gallinari and Griffin and Jordan are playing. Maybe Doc turns to Lou Williams in the fourth quarter when he needs offense. He might go to three-guard lineups like we've seen in the past and play Gallinari at power forward and Blake Griffin at center. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Lou Williams is a really, really great tool for Doc Rivers to have, almost as like a Swiss Army knife fourth guard. Not in the sense that Lou Williams is a traditional Swiss Army knife, where you think of a Swiss Army knife as a player who can do a lot of different things. So a Swiss Army knife is a guy who you can say, hey, go run point guard for us. Hey, go be a 3-and-D wing. Hey, go create your shot at shooting guard. And you can plug him into a lot of different situations. I think Lou Williams is a guy who has one skill set. He creates his own shot and can score on offense. He spaces the floor. He can hit threes. But that's it. He's like a much more efficient Jamal Crawford. He goes to the foul line a lot more than Jamal did as well. But because of the depth that the Clippers have at guard, and I'm not necessarily sure that it's quality depth. Like I said, I think their backcourt is relatively weak when stacked up to other playoff teams. But I just think that Lou Williams is a guy who, in a lot of different situations, Doc Rivers could find himself saying, well, I could use a guy who could go get his own shot here. I could use another scorer. I could use another little quick guard. And depending on how well Lou plays and how much Doc kind of starts trusting him and using him as a crutch, he could really start finding himself in a big role as the season goes on. I'm kind of cautious about that happening, though, if only because, like I said, with his contract status and his footing with the team, he does seem to be pretty squarely the least important of those four guards. And so you worry about putting too much emphasis on him and then losing him because you're more invested in the other three in the long term. And then it kind of puts your guard situation in upheaval all over again. Now, it's possible that if Lou Williams has a good season and it's a good fit and the Clippers perform well, maybe they decide, hey, these four guards, you know, I think it would be great if these four guys, Beverly, Rivers, Teodosic, Williams, could somehow come together, and if Doc Rivers uses them right, to be this like four-man guard rotation ensemble cast that is greater than the sum of their parts and can be really effective and plug into different situations and do a lot of different things well. I think that would be really, really cool to see, and that's why I'm kind of excited to hopefully see unfold this season. In which case, you try to keep Lou Williams next season, obviously, because he's an important part of that. But I am just a little cautious of Doc Rivers leaning on Lou Williams too heavily, as he leaned on Jamal Crawford too heavily in the past, and sort of costing not only the individual but collective development of units and lineups featuring, you know, a guy like Austin Rivers and Milos Teodosic and Patrick Beverley, when Lou Williams is likely to leave the team or is more likely to leave the team in the immediate future, and these other guys are more likely to be pieces that are a part of the team for 3 to 5 years. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Thank you for listening. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. You can tweet at me @LucasJHan. And make sure you're following clipsnation.com and @clipsnationsbn for all of the training camp and preseason news and updates. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.